What's up, everybody? It's Lee, otherwise known as Intuition, and you're tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in again. I appreciate it. You know the drill. Right now, actually, I'm going to do some reverse psychology. I want you guys to not follow us on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat. Do not follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Don't ever fucking even look at I Am Databases with two S's Twitter. Don't bother going to the fucking YouTube channel. Don't bother commenting and leaving 5 stars on iTunes when you search Kinda Neat. And please never visit kindaneat.net. The reason that I say this is because I feel like you get sick of hearing me to tell you to do that. So if I tell you to not do it, perhaps maybe you'll actually go do it, you lazy bastard. The other day in the mail, I got a letter from like a lawyer or a law firm group stating that I was part of a class action lawsuit against one of my former employees. Now, this former company that I worked for may or may not be like one of the biggest print and shipping companies, office printing, you know, photocopies and stuff like that. I used to work there, and for some reason, I now have like $400 that are going to come to me in the mail just because I worked there. And apparently they were like really an evil corporation about letting us go to lunch on time or like paying for vacation days and silly shit like that. I have no idea, but it's nice to get a thing in the mail that says, hey, you're going to get $400. The great thing is, I talked about it previously on one of the podcasts, like about when I had my first show, how we went to a copy shop and the girl gave us a bunch of free copies. Well, after that, after I graduated college, me, DJ Merge, who DJs for me, Equilibrium, who makes the beats, we all ended up working at the same copy shop because we're broke and that's what we needed jobs and that's what we did. We worked at copy shops. So it was very much like the Chappelle skit. And it's funny because we were working there like when the Chappelle skit came out. So people would come up to us and go, hey man, how do you feel about that Chappelle skit? Like, is it, and I'm like, it's hilarious. What do you mean? Like they would ask us like we thought we were, like they thought we were going to get offended or some shit. It was hilarious. And it's exactly how it is. Like when you work there, you really don't give a fuck about helping people. But the good news is about the one that I worked at one that was on a campus in Santa Barbara. Just for legal reasons, I'm not going to say what the company was, but you know, I figure at this point you could probably piece it together. The one we worked at didn't have cameras, and it was just me and DJ Merge, Leon. And since it didn't have cameras and we only had one manager there above us, like we got pretty good at being Robin Hoods. Like we felt like we were Robin Hoods. We felt like we were very noble people in that we would basically steal the shit. We would steal everything from them, like including a shit ton of money. And it's pretty evil in hindsight. But at the time I was broke as fuck and they were only paying us like maybe $10, $11 an hour. Who knows if even that. And, since there were no cameras, we started getting really good at simple arithmetic. And so it started off where like people would pay for faxes and it was like a fax was a dollar. I'm completely dry snitching on myself in this. So hopefully none of you guys, you know, get me in trouble for this. Don't be jerks. But no, it started off with faxes. Faxes were a buck. So people would always pay in cash. So it's like, oh, hey, you got to fax one page. That's $1. 5 pages, $5. So people will come in, pay $5 to do 5 pages of fax. And it's like, hey, do you need a receipt? And if they say no, cool, we're not punching in that fucking receipt. I'm putting that $5 in my pocket. And then it got to the point where, you know, we were splitting the fax money every day, maybe leaving with like $20 in our pocket. And then we're like, well, wait a second. We know how to balance these registers. If people are paying in cash and they don't need receipts, no one's ever going to know if we just pay really good attention and take money out of the registers. So it started being like, oh, hey, you know, it's $7.90. Do you need a receipt? And they're like, nah. Okay, cool. Well, they gave us a 10. All right, here's $2.10 back as your change. And then we would make note in our heads, remember to take $7.90 out of the register because I didn't need a receipt and that's your money. And it got really fucking... it got really intense. By the end of our tenure working there, we were probably pocketing like $80 a day. And I remember one time a kid comes in and he's in a rush. It's like his final class. And he's like, hey man, I'm in a super hurry. I have to get to class in 45 minutes and I have my report is due and it's all on this thumb drive, but I don't know if you're going to be able to do it. Is there any way that you can get this to me in 45 minutes? It's like 40 pages of color prints and I need it bound in a notebook and 3-hole punch and this and that and the other. And I was like, it would be a 5-minute job. I was like, oh yeah, man, no problem. I was like, our credit card machines are down though. Can you pay in cash? And he said, oh yeah, I could pay in cash. I said, cool, I'll do a quick estimate for you. And it came out to like, I don't know, it was like $140 for everything they needed or something. I was like, look, I'll tell you what, if you pay in cash, I'll give it to you for $100. Just come back in about a half hour. He said, cool. He runs off. I print it out. I'm done in like 5 minutes. he comes and gives me $100 and he thanks me and says that I saved his life. And I'm thinking, man, you saved my life too, because my rent is going to be a little easier this month. You know, I put the $100 in my pocket and go about my day thinking that I had just made the major come up. Then we also weren't allowed to accept tips. So mind you, we weren't supposed to accept tips, but then this guy comes running back after his class about 2 hours later. And he's like, yo, man, thank you so much. I can't tell you how much you saved my life. Like, this is the best experience I've ever had at a copy shop. And he says, here, this is for you, man. I know they don't pay you that much. I'm like, yeah, thanks, Dick. He fucking gives me $30 in cash, not realizing that I already had his other $100 in my pocket. And so I'm walking away with $130, not to mention all the fax money that we fucking made out with that day as well. And it was just like Christmas Eve all of a sudden. And at the time, I was living with a girl at the time, the one that like all the breakup songs on Girls Like Me is about. And dude, we used to eat so good. We were like these two young kids fresh out of college, and I would come home with like $80 in my pocket every night. I'd be like, hey, let's go eat steak. I got fat as shit that year working there, and it was a great time. And it's funny because at that time, at my brokest job, was probably the richest I've ever been, because off the books I was probably making more money than I've ever made in any year since then. And I was living with a girl and we had a cat. And like, I don't know, it's funny. Like, my shittiest job was probably the time of my life where I was the most adult and most responsible and had the most income coming in. And that's the end of the story. There's really no point to it. It was just like, hey, man, thank you guys for all that that cash that you gave me unknowingly. And now thank you for the class action lawsuit that I'm going to get. It's like things just come in full circle, don't they? Anyhow, this week on the podcast, we sat down with a talented young man named Zero. I found out about Zero. I've been hearing his name, but I'm like one of these people where I have to hear someone's name a few times and have a few people that I like vouch for them before I'll honestly go and check them out. And one night I just kind of got lost in an internet K-hole and I started looking up something on YouTube, and then I found some other shit on YouTube, and then I found some videos featuring Zero, and then that led me to more videos of Zero songs, and then I ended up at his Bandcamp and listened to the whole album one night. I don't really do that late at night. I don't like just listen to people's albums randomly. I'm too busy looking at porn and going to sleep. but I was really geeked on this fool, and I start texting people that I know, like, god damn, have you heard of this fool Zero? He's so tight, yada yada yada. So I hit him up, emailed him, and said, hey, what's up, man? You want to be on my podcast? And we've been going back and forth for a few weeks, and I finally got him in here, and I think you guys are going to enjoy this conversation. It was a nice philosophical, spiritual conversation. The dude has a very like shamanistic aura about him. He's a thinker, and I think we touched on some stuff that a lot of people will relate to. Also, the song that he dropped that you can find, that you don't have to go look at, on youtube.com/thatskindofneat was fucking awesome. So, you know, he runs with John Wayne, he runs with a lot of talented people, and I think you guys are going to enjoy this podcast, and I know that you're going to enjoy his music because it's dope. So with that being said, here's my conversation with Zero.
I went to engineering school for a little while.
Oh, yeah? What engineering school?
I went to Long Beach City.
Is that where you're from, Long Beach?
Yeah.
Born there?
Born and pretty much raised there, yeah.
What part of Long Beach?
My grandpa stayed on the west side. Uh-huh. That's pretty much where I stay now.
Yeah.
And went to church on the east side a whole lot. So,
what's up with Long Beach? I know that it's like pretty dangerous down there sometimes, huh?
I think it was in the past. It's not too bad now.
Not so bad anymore?
Nah.
Did you have to like try to avoid gang warfare and stuff as a kid? Or like, did you have to avoid trying to be jumped into any gangs?
Not really. I think there was more of a mystique about it. And like, kids who did it were really cool at that time. There was like this whole skateboard, dye your hair blonde, being a gang thing going on. I don't
really,
it wasn't very appealing, but it was tempting. Like,
black dudes were dyeing their hair blonde and being skater, yeah, kids, dude, in gangs.
Yeah, dude, like, I don't want to like cause any
right
any like ruckus, but yeah, insane babies, like those were the cool kids when I was growing up,
right?
Yeah.
This was what, in like the mid-90s, early 90s?
Maybe like the early 2000s.
Yeah, I get my generations mixed up. Now that I'm getting up in my years, I get my generations mixed up.
Yeah, me too.
What were you like in school?
I was maybe up until high school was super studious, like top of my class shit, but later on, I guess I don't know, just wanted to explore what else life was about.
were you early to grow? Like, you're a big above average size dude, I would say. I mean, like, well, we talked about in the car, 6'1".
Yeah.
You know, that's not huge, but that's not small by any means. Did you grow early or were you a late bloomer?
Oh, shit. I don't know. I was 5'8" around like seventh grade, and then like just, you know, bumped up a couple more inches, but I'm still the runt in my fam.
You play a lot of sports as a kid?
I just skated and played basketball.
You still skate?
Yeah, I still skate.
Nice. Are you any good?
I'm all right. You know, that's tight. Yeah, just I go in between skating and then like making music. Like, I realize a week or two has gone by and I was having skated, so I'm out of shape again. But I pick it up really quick again.
Must be hard to skate around in them Jesus sandals.
Yeah, these are like aesthetics.
Yeah, are,
like, you know, just like be comfortable shit. But you know, I got some. Some 6.0s.
I feel you. Do you feel like the skating and music tie in together?
Oh, yeah. Skating is, it was my first meditation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, really just losing myself to an activity and having to breathe, you know?
Yeah, I don't skate, but I feel like it seems like it would be a meditative process because it's so much muscle memory and repetition.
Yeah.
To learn something, you really have to, it seems like you have to go to a different place, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or else you would probably lose yourself to frustration.
Oh, yeah, meta skating.
Yeah.
And is it, next to music, like one of my favorite things to lose myself in.
As a kid, I tried to pick up a skateboard in the late 80s because that's when I was raised.
Yeah.
Like, I was probably like, you know, 6 or 7 when I got my first skateboard. And I remember all the kids in my neighborhood getting good and starting to be able to ollie. And like, one kid could like skate and then lift or like, you know, put pressure on the tail and like do 360 spins, you know, like just continuously. And I was like, and I saw him, I was like, oh, these kids are so much better than me. And fuck this. I don't have the patience for it because I couldn't get into the meditating part of it.
Yeah, it's easy to get discouraged by the talent of the youth. Like, they're just like incredible at like 10, you know?
Right.
But I don't know. I guess I was like, I don't like running. So like, I'd rather do this thing that looks and feels cool. And like, it's just gratifying when you land a trick, you know, like I run 2 laps and I'm like, fuck my life or something, you know?
But, were you super into skate videos and stuff too?
Oh yeah. I still watch skate videos.
Did you learn a lot about music through skate videos? That's kind of a theme that I hear from skaters.
Dude, it's crazy. Like, I think my first brush with any underground music and like just next level lyricism was on like Tony Hawk Pro Skater. Like wanting to skate, not having a skateboard, jumping over bars and like, you know, just like wishing I could do it and listening to the music on the video game.
Huh.
Yeah.
What songs stuck out to you in particular? Do you remember?
I think Dell.
Oh, yeah.
It's important to practice good hygiene.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. You got to wash out ass if you must.
And Cannibal Ox.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Cannibals.
Iron Galaxy.
That's such a great album.
Oh, shit.
Such a great album.
Still the Colvain. Oh, is that Colvain?
Yeah, it's
right?
Colvain, yeah.
It's still one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's an amazing record. I heard they have a new one that they're working on or putting out.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. We'll see if it if they can recreate that same magic. I feel like sometimes music is so period based, you know what I mean, where that album is timeless, but it also represents such a period that sometimes it's hard to recreate that magic after a certain time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel
very few groups have been able to stick together and keep creating that magic. Like, maybe De La Soul is one of them.
Mm.
You know what I mean? They never really had a problem recreating the magic that they always create. So
yeah, dog, it struck me because they were talking about real shit in a really like real way. Like, you know, you dabble listening to hood shit and it's like they're not touching on subjects that, you know, you find, you know, need to be heard and stuff. Yeah. But, you know,
I thought the juxtaposition between the two of them as well, where you had one of them kind of being more outward and open with what he was saying, and then one was kind of internalizing his meanings, and you had to like kind of dissect his lyrics a little more than the other. You know what I mean? And their voices were so upset. It worked really well. That's a good album.
Yeah, super.
Anyway,
super. Love that shit.
Yeah,
love
for sure.
That shit.
So, what year did you pick up a skateboard, or what age were you?
Shit, I had to be in like 6th grade when Tony Hawk Pro Skater came out, you know, just like watching that shit. It's weird to like get into skateboarding in that era where like it was already kind
corporate.
Of cool and corporate.
Yeah.
And then I think maybe like a few years later, that whole like Pharrell, Terry Kennedy thing like popped up, and like, I don't know. I guess that like might have turned me off a little bit because it was like all these fools like running around on skateboards, but I still enjoyed it like throughout. Like, just...
Well, like when I was in 6th grade, I wanted to be a pro baseball player because that's like what I did, you know? Like, so did you look at it when you started as like, you know, maybe this could be a career? Did you ever have that kind of thing?
Because
at that point, it was already, people had careers, you know?
Yeah,
it was big. It was selling toothpaste, you know what I mean? Like,
usually for me, it was like, oh, if I pick it up quick, then, you know, maybe there's something in it. But like most things in my life that I find myself good at, it's just like, you know, it's on some, if it happens, it happens. You know, I won't like gung-ho it or anything like that. It's more like, oh, we'll just see.
And it seems like you utilize a lot of your creativity more for catharsis. Like, it's like you don't do it as a means to maybe support yourself, but maybe to support yourself mentally and physically.
Oh, yeah, barthasis.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's like, I think it, because life is precious, like I shouldn't like squander my moments. So it's a lot of like recording for record purposes, like, you know,
art for art's sake.
Well, almost art for art's sake. I mean, you know, still would like to
people to hear it.
Yeah, like people to hear it, like people to buy it, you know, be fans of it, like elevate the culture, like all of that stuff. At the same time, like I want it to be meaningful for myself. So when I look back on it, either it's like, you know, so painful that I don't want to repeat it, or so beautiful that, you know, it's just great to have and share with people and stuff.
Yeah. So you're a sixth grader and you pick up a skateboard. Do you go through like a little rebellious phase?
Not at all.
No?
I still am a good kid.
Yeah.
I haven't stolen a thing in my life for anything. Like, it's just, I think at the very most, I just rebelled by listening to music and, I don't know. I think around that time I like stopped going to church.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but
yeah, I was going to say, you mentioned church. You know, you went to church on the east side, you said.
Yeah.
So were you raised in a very religious household?
Very religious. I cannot say. I will say that they are still very Christian. And
yeah.
I hearken to those Christian values. I think there's a whole lot to be learned from Jesus. And I just think it closes certain people off or something. Like, I went to college and it was just like expanded minds everywhere, and like, you know, I didn't want to be like, you know, holding my hands together, like,
yeah,
you know,
you just start questioning things.
Yeah, well, I started questioning things long before then, and I didn't even like question it. It was more like, there's got to be more to it.
So initially, before we go into questioning, like initially when you were growing up, was it kind of like a curse-free household and like, you know, like parental advisory CDs not allowed, that kind of thing?
It was like weird, you know, how like some things will be like contradictory. Like, you know, my dad was, he's from the islands, so he loves to drink. And
what,
like,
what islands?
The Virgin Islands.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, St. Kitts.
And, okay.
You know, he bounced around those, but he likes to drink, and he likes like Bob Marley. There were like, I was surrounded by these things that I would, I guess, get into later. And, you know, just people being people, and it didn't seem like facetious or anything.
Right.
It was just like, you just feel like you can just learn a lot more from other people.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. My mom is a part of the choir, and like,
where's she from?
She was born in Mississippi. And moved out here when she was like 12 or 13. And
okay.
My dad moved out here when he was like 12 or 13.
How
well.
Did they end up here? Their parents just found work out here?
My dad went to Poly, and he met other musical talents. My dad plays the bass.
Okay.
And my cousin Mo, he's dope. He produced, I think he did a lot of the live instruments for like Tupac's Me Against the World record.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and like they were in Poly the same year as Snoop. Like, they all knew each other. It was very, very interesting.
Shit was bubbling back then,
yeah,
at Poly.
Really.
Like, I knew about Long Beach Poly even up back home, like, you know, five states away. Like, Long Beach Poly had a bit of, it was known.
Yeah, it was like, it was the place to go. In fact, I wanted to go there really bad because my dad went there, and I was like, I heard lots of famous people went there. I was like, yo, I want to catch that essence.
Did you end up going?
King Drew.
What kind of school is that?
A medical magnet.
A medical magnet.
Yeah.
Wow. So were you planning on being a doctor originally?
No, not at all. It was just like, it was for, you know, elevated minds. My mom had a friend, I believe her name was Cassandra, and she had a daughter who went to King Drew, almost went to Cabrillo, which is on the west side where I live now. And she was like, no, do not take your son there. It's a new school, and like a lot of like hood kids are there. Like, don't let him do that. And took me to King Drew, which was pretty much in Watts. So it's just like a lot of hood kids, but more safe, contained environment.
Yeah.
Very high walls.
Intelligent hoodlums.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed that.
How did the education values differ in King Drew? A medical magnet, like I hear that and I think like, oh, you must be just taking biology courses all day or something. Yeah. Like,
well, they had a hospital right across the street from it. And if kids wanted to become doctors, you know, you could be in the hospital program and they take you off campus and like, you know, you serve duty in the emergency room or something like that. Yeah, I wasn't having it.
What were you doing in high school? By that point?
Rapping.
Yeah.
Rapping a ton and like trying to skate while balancing homework. And then around my last year was like, you know, 6 AP classes, like, you know, just trying to get it in, like really was like, okay, I'm a go for gold, you know.
Right, right.
While I got the opportunity.
When was the first time you wrote a rap?
Ooh, when I was like 8.
Really?
Yeah, dog.
When you're 8, like, okay, so we have a few years between us. So like my experience with falling in love and rap is going to be very different than yours. So I'm curious. I always love talking to like younger dudes about what was the shit that made you want to write raps.
Ooh.
Because for me, with you, when you say you wrote a rap when you were 8, I was probably almost in college by that point. So I'm like,
word.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So who was it? Who was the rapper that set it off for you?
You know what? I can't even really say, to be honest. Like, my grandma wrote poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And like one day they came down. They lived in Kentucky. They come down either for Christmas or summer. I think it was Christmas. And my aunt, her daughter, was sitting on the couch writing a poem for her neighbor, Miss Jewel. And I was like, I want to write a poem. Like, I was like, I don't know. I like to challenge people when I was little. I was like, oh, I can do that.
You're competitive.
You know? Very, yeah, still very competitive in here.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but yeah, like I wanted to do one and I wrote one. It was called Dreams Are for Night. And I don't know, I had to be like 6 at that point. And then went to school. And like I had a core group of friends who were like one was an actor, like had an agent, little kid, curly hair or what have you. And he wanted to rap too. And I don't know, like it was a song called You Got It Going On we wrote.
Nice.
Yeah, it was sick.
About a girl?
Yeah.
Nice.
I can only remember his verse.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, because his verse was the dopest.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit. Like, somebody wrote that for him.
And did that spark your competitive side as well?
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, shit, now I got to step my bars up at 8 years old?
Dog. Yeah. I was on.
I believe it.
I was so on.
That's interesting. Yeah, I have actually a similar story about starting to rap is like, I started with poetry as well.
Yeah.
Where when I was in third grade, I had this teacher, Mrs. Brody. Rest in peace, Mrs. Brody. She died of skin cancer. Very sweet lady. We had to write a journal every day, and it had to be 3 sentences to make a paragraph, and you had to write about your day. And me at you know, however old that you are in third grade, I was like, that seemed like a lot of work to me. A paragraph sounded like a lot of work.
Yeah,
I said, hey, Ms. Brody, how about instead of a paragraph, why don't you let me write 4 lines of poetry every day, which was 4 sentences is more than 3 sentences. But in my head, it seemed easier to me. And so she was like, yeah, sure. So every day in third grade, I wrote a 4-line poem. But it was always like, oh, I'm sitting in school. I wish I was by a pool, whatever. Like, you know, like real simpleton shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was the start. It was a start. It's funny because, you know, being a fucking 8 or 9 year old white kid in Alaska, like, and already like starting to like rap music, like that wasn't
That's
like,
so
that
tight,
wasn't
though.
Some normal shit.
That's
you
perfect,
know?
Though.
Yeah, it wasn't some normal shit, but it's like, yeah, anyhow.
That was lovely, man.
Yeah, fuck yeah, man. Fun times. So anyhow, I'm always interested in how people get their start because I think like there's probably a point in your head where you consider like, oh, this was when I started really considering myself a rapper. And whether it be like the first time you were recording your stuff or like whether it be the first time you were rapping in Cypher with your friends, it's like when you really look back, you can see that you were really like already a creative wordsmith at a very young age.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I was talking at one, dog.
Oh, it was the same way.
Yeah, just early speaker. And I probably wouldn't rap if it wasn't for other rappers. Like every stage I went up, like there was always someone rapping and I was always like, like, you know,
yeah.
Like I could do that.
No, I think it's awesome. Like I feel like dudes your age like have a step up in that like, rap was a fully formed art form when you guys got to start being like influenced by it. You know what I mean? Like
dog.
Rap was just kind of figuring itself out when I started hearing it. You know what I mean? Like, which is really interesting. The masters of the art form as you're a kid where we were waiting for the masters of the art form to come out. You know? It's tight.
Yeah, dude. Like, who was it? When I first heard Doom, I had to be like in the middle of high school.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and like, Aesop Rock, just like, pff, like, yeah. What I was trying to hope to achieve was already like, you know, Quasar and Aesop, and I was just like, well, what am I gonna do?
Right,
like,
right,
you know,
right.
I was like, there's no more. Like,
right.
You know, as far as elevated language goes, and I was just like, oh, it's all about sharing your own essence, and I think that's what made me like solidify into like my own self. I was like, oh, this is a part of me. I've low key been battling with this my whole life, just like, you know, wanting to write and you know, say my piece and do it in a unique way. And yeah, that's where I've landed. That's where I am now.
You say you were talking really early at 1 year old.
Yeah.
Are your parents really bright as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad skipped a grade, and my mother, I mean, she doesn't talk about her school life so much. She's really into like DIY stuff and home cooking channels and yeah. things like that. But they're both very, very bright.
And were they like really hell-bent on education when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. They were like, you know, like bring home A's and like, you know, nothing else. You know, they were very gung-ho about it, but it wasn't like pressure on me. I wanted to do it. Like I was competitive in that as well.
You loved school.
Yeah, up until high school, up until like the middle of high school.
Right, right. I feel like we had a similar path in education where it's like, man, I was so passionate about school as a kid. And then when I got to high school, I think a part of me started questioning even the people that were teaching me, going like, are these people really that much smarter? Or, you know what I mean? Like, are they just kind of like, you know, they're just reading along in the book too.
Yeah,
you
know what straight I mean? Up. It's just, I think I figured out that it was just information, and that information exists, and that I could swallow it up at my own pace, and proved it to myself by like moving ahead of people and like chilling, you know, and that was cool, but it didn't last. You know, I was like, I'd chill and then get comfortable chilling and then like just want to chill all the time. And I had to keep up my competitive nature in order to achieve that. And I realized, I was like, well, maybe it's no longer for like education's sake anymore. It's like, you know, it was kind of like to keep up with the Joneses. Mm-hmm. You know?
Did you go to college?
Yeah, I went to Cal State Long Beach, but I didn't finish. I went for 3 years and started off in business. It was easy enough because, you know, I would just focus on my studies and nobody talked in the classes really. Like I was super young, and, you know, I was 17 because my birthday is late. Uh-huh. But yeah, just in like a finite math class, and I thought that was boring, but I had an elective and it was a theater class, and I took to that. It was fun and engaging and completely opposite of my view of school, and I was like, fuck this, I'm a theater major, dog. Like,
wow.
Yeah, I just like...
You
I
didn't
just,
do any theater in high school?
I always did like tech for theater because I thought it was cool, and like my closer friends were always in the plays and stuff, but I was like, fuck being on stage. I think like the only time I had been in a play before that was like, you know, middle school or something like that. But yeah, I totally like went for it.
I think that people that have a penchant for writing raps and being able to rap, and particularly to be able to perform in front of people, I think it's kind of a natural transition into acting, honestly. Like the people that are actually comfortable on stage, I think a lot of times they don't have that much of a problem getting comfortable on stage in different formats or in front of the camera. You know what I mean? So
definitely. I think at that time, too, like I was comfortable performing, but how comfortable, like I couldn't really say. And like I had to like break out of my shell and like just take eyes like, yes, look at me. You know, like it was like I kind of like jumped into the water, you know, like I had to get used to it. And
when you say break out of your shell, were you shy as a kid?
No, I was not shy as a kid, but
were you a ham bone as a kid?
What is that?
Like a ham bone, like someone who wanted attention. I know I was talking about this with somebody last night. As a child, I was the oldest cousin, and I was like early to speak, early to read, all that shit. So everybody's like, oh, look at Lee. Oh, watch what Lee can do. Lee, do this. And I used to dance. I used to fucking like whatever. I could juggle by the time I was in second grade, you know, like stupid shit. So I was like their little kid that would do tricks for them and entertain everybody. Were you kind of like that?
Yeah, dog. I have vivid memories of going to Chuck E. Cheese and not playing the games. I would just dance in the front for hours, dog. Just like, you know, dance to the songs with the people who work there and shit.
Yeah.
Like, be walking back to the table, people like smacking my back, giving me drinks. I was just like that dude at Chuck E. Cheese.
That's tight. It's funny because now as an adult, I'm like really shy when it comes to dancing.
Yeah.
Like, and I kind of look at people that like really go hard in a club dancing, like, wow, that guy is fucking on one. But when I was a kid, I was a fucking dancing fool, dude. Yeah. I would be winning dance competitions at the youth center and shit. Like,
talking, boy.
I loved it.
Yeah, it's super about it. I was so about it.
Well, I mean, I think early on, when you discover that you can dance, that's also how you discover that you have rhythm, and rhythm is the basis of fucking rapping. You know what I'm saying?
Straight up.
Anyhow.
Dude, yeah, it was all about performing and, like, you know, look what I can do, and like, I can do that better than you.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got older, saw people that were better than me and just kept getting hit with that, and just like,
it just inspired you.
Yeah, like wanting to be better and better. And I don't know, like, sometime too, I like also lost my confidence. Like, I don't know what it was, like puberty or something, you know, like going through the motions, but like, sometimes I would like lose my confidence. And then, you know, at a bigger level, there is like higher stakes, and you also get like nervous because of that and stuff. But I feel like I learned myself out of that again, and just remembered like who I was when I was young. Just like, go for it, dog.
Another thing that struck me earlier that you said was, you know, that your parents just expected you to bring home A's.
Yeah.
Mine were the same way. I could relate to you in that. And I remember as a kid, my friends that would bring home A's, they would get rewarded for them. So it's like, okay, it's like A, B, B, A. Okay, you get $30 for each A, $20 for a B. You don't get nothing for a C, whatever. And my folks were like, hey, if you don't get all A's, like, you're in trouble. It was like the opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
Were your folks like that?
Yeah, dog. It was like, get A's and do the dishes.
Exactly. And I think part of me that drove me to do that was almost like, I always just wanted that validation from my folks of like, hey, you're doing good. Because they weren't easy to say you're doing good. Were you kind of like that? Like,
yeah, dog. I mean, like, once they found out that I was bright, they were like, stay bright and
don't fuck up.
Yeah, don't fuck up. And it was like, because if you do, we'll whoop your ass and remind you of who you are and where you came from. And yeah, like, just wasn't. It was just the deterrent, like, not necessarily an incentive.
Yeah.
But my grandpa kind of spoiled me whenever I like did good, you know.
Dude, the same thing. My grandmother would spoil me. My folks, plus my dad was a medic, so it was like when we were sick, it's like, dude, you had to have a limb falling off to go to the hospital. He's like, oh yeah, you have a big cut on the back of your head. Cool, I'll stitch you up in the bathroom. We don't got to go to the hospital. You know, that kind of shit. Yeah,
how convenient.
Yeah. And so like, in hindsight, talking about being a ham or whatever and seeking that attention and dancing with people, I feel like that was also kind of like seeking that validation from people. Yeah, you know what I mean?
A lot of validation seeking. You know, just so much of what I had been was, you know, high caliber, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, just, yeah, that's, I never even thought about it, you know, like in context.
Yeah. I usually try not to like put my personal shit too much into the podcast, but as you're talking, I like really relate to that. So I just felt the need to chip in. So
Yeah.
So when did you actually like start recording raps? Was it in high school?
Yeah, I was, so adamant about making music. First, I started making beats. Like, I knew I rapped already, but I really didn't have a means to record. And I got Acid Pro, some Sony Acid.
That's what I started on.
Yeah. Scoop DeVille uses that as well. I just found that out.
Oh, tight.
But
I didn't even know that was still around.
Yeah,
that's,
right?
That's crazy.
I seen it in Guitar Center for like $100. I was like, shit. Oh, shit.
That's crazy.
Nah, but I started making beats on that, and it was Keyframe, so like all of my beats were like Southern style, like beats, you know, just program stuff. And I don't know, tightbeats.com. I don't know. That was
like you used to post them on forums and shit.
People didn't like them, you know, because they changed too much. They were like strange.
What were they influenced by at that time?
Like Ludacris stuff, you know.
I always guess Ludacris. Folks in your age range, I always guess Ludacris because I'm like that. He was the shit at that time.
Ludacris was my nigga.
Yeah.
Like, when it comes to charismaticness and expressionism, like, he was king to me.
And he was really playing with his voice a lot, which is something you do.
Yeah, dude. Like, probably. I mean, like, people always liken me to, like, you know, other, like, underground favorites.
You remind me a little bit of Breezy Bruin.
I'm not familiar.
Have you ever heard him?
No.
Go check out Prince Among Thieves.
I've heard that record, though.
Oh, it's great. And he's the star MC. That album, it's like a movie.
Yeah.
So every rapper plays a different character, but the main character is Breezy Bruin. And there's something, like, it's not necessarily you guys' voice, but it's something in your cadence and rhythm that reminds me of him.
It's the swing, dog.
Yeah, because you play, I think you play with your voice a little more than he does, but yeah. The kind of, like, nonstop bars and rhymes, it reminds me of Breezy.
Yeah, it's...
At the time, he was, like, supposed to be next. Like, yeah. he was the man. Everybody's like, holy shit, this kid is, like, amazing.
Yeah, just something about, like, being relentless and having the breath is just, like... It exudes the mastery. It's like, oh shit, like I can't fuck, like I'll be running out of breath, I'll be slobbing, like some shit like that. Things that you have to overcome to like do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's some shit. And I've heard that record before. Like it used to, I don't know, somebody sent it to me, was like, you would like this. And
it's
like,
good.
Yeah, I dug it. I really dug it. I haven't heard it in a long
time. Yeah, pop it open again and listen to Breezy and tell me if I'm wrong. Speaking of breathing and breath control, I feel like you've already brought up meditation and talking to you this morning on the way here, you said you were doing you do your morning rituals. Like, tell me about the sort of spirituality that you are a part of at this point in your life, or like what role meditation and stuff plays.
With the spirituality, I think I needed something higher than me to ground me, so to speak, because I've been to many places in the corners of my mind, like, you know, questioning reality and, you know, like coming into the knowledge of Buddhism when I probably shouldn't have. Like,
how old were you when you figured out, or like learned about Buddhism?
I think
you said you started questioning Christianity at like 6th, 7th grade, huh?
Well, yeah, in my mind. And then like I let it out probably like 9th grade, and then like, you know, you get girlfriends or something that's not really into it and like opens up the conversation constantly. And I don't think I really like, you know, set myself apart from it until like early college, when there were just like a lot of different, you know, diverse people. And I just needed something higher than me that like brought everything together. Cause really it wasn't like, I don't want to be Christian because it's this and that. Like there was always these like negative things they would have to say about Christians. I'm like, well, they're pretty much good people. Like I was raised by them. My parents are still Christian. Mm-hmm. Like you're kind of talking shit right now, but yeah, like the notion of praying has always like, you know, brought me peace of mind, you know, and I just needed something that was going to make me better. Like, being Christian really didn't make me better. It made me afraid to go to hell, like,
yeah,
for the most part.
That's a very poignant way to put it.
Yeah, and I just needed to know that, like, there was peace out there somewhere, and I generalized it to something like, you know, the Most High, you know, like, that's who got it. That's what universe is to me, but... meditating is a new trick for me, and I didn't really get into it until this past year. A friend of mine who I went to high school with, she's the it person on campus out at Tuskegee, and was running for city council. She's a year younger than me.
Wow.
Like had the competition, had to cheat to beat her, you know?
Wow.
Kind of thing. And when she came to my house during the summer, she was like, oh, I want to do this ritual with you. And she had this copper pyramid, these like dried cow dung pieces, which is, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, okay. And then like she had butter oil called ghee. Like it's butter, but the dairy has been removed from it through boiling. Uh-huh. And yeah, we sat down, like, rolled up a couple blunts, like, you know, I was taking it to the face, like, but not feeling overwhelmingly high. There was like, you know, she burnt it and she did this mantra, and she just started working. She started like doing her campaign stuff, and I'm just in the corner making music, and I'm just like vibing, feeling really like really slowed down, like how weed gets you, but not nervous, like just heavy and like just feeling myself. And I don't know. Since we smoked 2 blunts in a closed room, you're thinking like, oh, I'm a smell like weed when I go in the house right now. But I came out and I smelled like a light bonfire. Like it was like this whole like awesomeness about it. And you have to do this. It's called Agnihotra. You have to do this ritual at sunrise at a specific time and at sunset at a specific time. You just open and close your day.
That's why you wake up at 6.
Yeah, that's well, I wake up around 5:30.
Yeah,
you know.
To explain why I know that to those of you listening, when I was texting Zero, going like, "Okay, yeah, I can swoop you up." Like, you know, most rappers are like, "I'm like noon," and they're like, "Oh, dog, noon." And this fool's like, "Oh yeah, don't worry about it. I'm always up at 6." I said, "God damn, that's because I'm up at 8 and that makes me feel like I'm on top of the day. But shit, 6. That's,
yeah, it's yeah. Like I said, it's like it's a new development for me. And like sometimes, you know, being caught up in rapper life, you know, nightlife, doing clubs and shit, like I can't do it all the time. But for the most part, when I'm labbing, like it's good to get a good night's rest, wake up early in the morning when nobody's around. It's just like night, only there's light. And I don't know, my roommate who I share a wall with, he sleeps early and wakes up early as well. So like, you know, I don't want to bother him or anything at night. So
what did you call it? What is it called again? Agnihotra?
Agnihotra.
Agnihotra.
Agni means fire. Yeah. And I'm not sure what Hotra means.
Like what kind of, like what?
It's Orthodox Hindu kind of practice. And yeah, it is closely related to yoga, mm-hmm. which I've been trying to get myself more into. Like,
I started just doing yoga recently.
Yeah.
But more like for fitness stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like for me, it's fitness as well. Like overall, just holistic health.
You know? That's the thing. I still have like jock tendencies from like athletics in high school and stuff. So I'll go do these like gorilla heavy weight workouts at the gym. And I was feeling like it was getting me in shape, but I was also feeling like more tense. Like all my muscles were always like flexed and too tense. And so somebody's like, oh, you should start doing yoga.
Yeah, straight up.
And the first time I did it, man, I'm telling you, like I sweat like I had just run 2 miles, but I felt like so fucking relaxed.
Yeah.
It was amazing. By the third time I did it, like when you end in the corpse pose or whatever, like I was like listening to the lady on the video that I was watching, and I just fell asleep. Like I got hypnotized and I fell asleep.
Yeah.
And I woke up feeling like, holy shit, man, I feel alive right now.
Yeah, dog. Yeah. I love it. Like they always have free yoga out on the park bluff in Long Beach.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, pretty much every day of the week. And I really got into it then. I've always really wanted to get into it because, you know, I hearken to spiritual topics even before I knew what it was about. I just like, I knew there was something more, and yoga came with it for the most part. And as I studied it and like people that I met, you know, it all kind of tied in. Like, oh, believe it or not, like I was watching this documentary on sadhus, which are like traveling spiritual men in India.
Uh-huh.
And there was this like crazy gnarly documentary about the most radical sect, and like this guy lives on the cremation grounds and like does all this stuff. And I like heard these, like he does these wails where he's like screaming out the name of Shiva, and I like sampled it and I was like, ooh, that's mine, you know. Like started throwing them in my sets, got into Agnihotra, which I didn't know was like related, you know, like the whole Hindu like feel. And then
so you were drawn to it before you knew what it was.
Yeah, well, that's how everything in my life happens. Like I'll get hints of something, and then like it'll just keep appearing and like pretty much becomes me. Like it just like, I guess you may know how like mirrors work, but you know, once you've taken something into your consciousness, you start to identify it. Like maybe I wouldn't have noticed it, you know, if I hadn't seen that documentary or something. Like I wouldn't have caught the relationship, wouldn't have like got these prayer beads if I, you know, didn't hearken to those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to grow and expand in yoga, I think my, you know, subconscious self was like, you know, get the tools, and then like, you know, understand, read the books, you know, and practice the meditation, la-di-da, you know.
I have a hard time relating to spirituality. I've always had a hard time relating to spirituality. Like I almost wish that I could be more spiritual, because like when you talk about like you started to question Christianity, when I started to question Christianity, everybody was talking about God and like how God talks to them, and I was like, nobody ever talks to me.
Yeah, straight
like
up.
I don't feel that, you know. And I kind of always went the route of science. But I wonder, like in that time when you said like you knew there was something bigger, and you needed something that made you a better person, or like that, you know, that makes you better.
Yeah.
Like, was there a time in the interim of emptiness where you felt kind of lost without something? Or like when you were questioning Christianity, like, did you feel lost?
Yeah, dog. It was crazy. That was when I was commuting from my parents' house to Cal State Long Beach every morning with a broke ass van, and like really struggling to make the grades, and like, you know, like dealing with being in the house and like being at college, which were like two different worlds, and wanting to better myself was just a little difficult with my parents there. You know, like I didn't know how I was going to do it. And dude, I was like undergoing like sleep deprivation, like just like feeling like this reality, this plane was a dream. Like I was just, I was on one, bro. Like, you know, tried psychedelics for the first time and just got my head completely blown off. Like,
what did you try?
First thing I did was shrooms, and it was very light. Me and my friends went out to Big Sur during spring break.
It's a beautiful place to go shroom.
Yeah, dude, it was wonderful.
Were the poppies blooming?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
It was beautiful and scary at the same time.
To everyone that's listening, if you've not been to Big Sur, it, like, when the poppies are blooming and go right on those fucking cliffs, like, you are missing out on what California is about.
Dog, for real, shit. For real. Like, water, creeks, huge trees that are hundreds
cliffs,
of years old.
Just
yes,
cliffs.
Dog.
Like, it's gorgeous.
Dude, I was about that life. Yeah. I was so into it, and it was just a juxtaposition, you know, going
Why
there.
Was it scary?
It was scary because you see the power of emotions and like how that can actually shift and change your reality to like, it just really opened my eyes to perception. Like I was,
well, I think a lot of times when you're doing hallucinogens, you can kind of almost visualize energy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, definitely.
Like the light trails that you see or whatever, that starts to feel like shit is alive.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
The world was breathing, yeah, my dude. And I was with a few friends, my homie and his lady. We were walking and like, she was like, you know, frolicking along and like walking on this dead tree and slipped and fell.
Oof.
And like, it was like, oh, you know, like she hit her chest and she was just like, oh, like face went flush red. Like
that's not some like, shit you want to see on a losing gym.
And then like she looks down at the tree she was walking on and it's dead and it has mushrooms growing out of it. And then she's just like, everything's dying. Like, ugh. Just started freaking out. We were just like, oh no. Like the beautiful colors like turned dark. Like the sky went dark. You
That's
know?
The other thing. Like when you're around a group of people like that, everyone's on the same vibe.
Yeah.
And like if the vibe shifts, everyone shifts.
Yeah,
and that's
dark.
Really, that's like something, that's a theme in hallucinogens,
yeah,
for real.
Definitely. Yeah. And my homie was, he had done it so many times. He was like the shaman of the journey.
He's trying
he was
to
like,
guide everyone
he was
back.
Like, I'll handle this. Yeah. You guys go on. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
And I was like, oh, like, and then it got lighter again, you know, like walked away and he like tended to his lady. And that was a beautiful experience as well. You know, just like having someone who had control in that very vulnerable situation.
Right.
Like, opened me up to like, you know, the idea that, okay, maybe I can get to this place, you know, on my own terms, you know, and have the control to like sustain my emotional sway.
Yeah.
Which pretty much came of doing psychedelics. After shrooms, I had tried LSD. I won't say it was unknowingly, but I went to Big Bear for a friend's birthday party, and
you got laced.
Yeah, well, I went there, and then like realized that we were in this cabin in Big Bear, and like it was an LSD party. Like,
oh,
I was
yeah.
like, what? Like, dude, like I'm not like that, you know? And it was my.
It's
friend.
Better than it being an orgy party that you didn't realize
yeah,
you were
dude,
invited to. You
that
know?
That would have freaked me out, dog. Oh my god. Yeah. Oh my god.
So, like, how did you ingest the LSD?
It was just like a tab.
Tabs,
yeah. But it was.
Did you guys go explore?
Ooh, let's see.
Acid makes me just like, I talked about it on the last podcast.
Yeah.
Actually, like, it just makes me want to go explore.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like LSD could have been a pleasurable experience if I was allowed to explore. Much like, you know, being on shrooms.
You stayed in the cabin.
Yeah, stayed in. Well, it was dark outside and freezing.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So like, I mean, being outside was awesome. Like, I looked up, the moon was pretty much full, and like, you know, light was taking on a whole new like property. So like it felt like a portal, like a light was coming from my forehead all the way to the moon.
Yeah.
And I was just, I don't know, I was just in awe of that. And then I'm like, okay, what's going on inside? Like just constantly trying to see what was up with other people. And then I don't know, I took a spill, like my mind started going too fast and my body decided of its own will to cease function. Like I was walking up the stairs and like stopped and fell.
Ugh.
And everything after that was a complete blur. Like
really?
I lost myself like in those moments, and it was after that I started experiencing PTSD, like a lot of anxiety and
like in everyday life.
Yeah, dog.
Wow.
like crowds never used to bother me, but then like I'd go to like Low End Theory, which was like my home at the time, and it just people, like the vibe and energy of people and like the heat, it would drive me mad, dude. I start seeing stars. It was like galaxies were overlaid over my eyes, you know?
This is only after one time?
This was one time doing acid.
Wow, no shit.
Never did it again. But like any substance that I put into my body, whether it be alcohol or like herb, like if there is energy around me, if there's something intense, loud, or anything going on around me, I will start to hallucinate.
Wow.
And I guess I kind of wanted that, you know? I wanted to experience spiritual things in everyday life without the aid of, you know, some secondary substance, because I feel like, you know, being human kind of gets humdrum, you know, or something, and like people escape to that place, you know, because, you know, that's more real to them, you know, being broken up away from this thing that's really, really daunting. But it just taught me to respect substances and like, you know, just take it all.
Have you done shrooms again since then?
Yeah. Because shrooms was such a pleasurable experience, yeah, I allowed myself to do it again. And it completely turned around my PTSD.
Mm.
It was like, okay, I did acid and then I was like turned off of psychedelics. And then I think somebody offered me some shrooms and I was like, okay, you know, like I did have a good time on them. Maybe again. And
it was great again.
I was cured.
It's funny for me, it's the exact opposite. I've always had a great time on acid, and the first time that I did shrooms, I had a horrible trip, like freaked the fuck out.
Oh man,
it was terrible. I don't want to get into the whole story, but it was bad. It was a bad trip, and I kept trying to do shrooms, going, I'm gonna end on a high note with these. I did them a bunch of times, and I never had a good trip.
Yeah, I think expectation probably does it too. You're like, I'm gonna have a good time this time, but then like you're sort of remembering what happened.
You know what really fucked up for me with shrooms was that we took shrooms and then we decided to watch Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
Even sober, that is the darkest, most depressing. Yeah. I'm like, how is this a child's movie?
It's
this
creepy.
That
dark.
Shit is fucking dark.
Very, very
and we watched
dark.
That on shrooms and I'm like, this is fucking, this is killing my fucking vibe, dude. And then, it was terrible.
People do that. Alice in Wonderland. When I was on LSD, they were watching the hippie episode of Pee Wee's Playhouse. It made me feel like such an idiot. I was just like, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
You know? My parents are probably like pissed, like, you know, or something like that. It was just, it can really like mess you up if where your mind comes from is, you know, something very like religiously grounded or like, you know, don't do drugs. Like those things are like in your head when you do those things. But like, you know, things can be pleasurable. Like those experiences can be, you know, you can learn from them if you respect them enough. And that's what I learned.
Absolutely.
Like, from doing them.
For sure. Is weed a part of your life still?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When did you start smoking weed?
College.
In college? Oh, you were late.
Yeah, I was late, dog.
Were you ever a drinker?
Nah. I started drinking and smoking weed the same year. I was 17 at Cal State Long Beach. And like
just once you're out of the house, let's get it in.
Yeah. It was more like, okay, I'm a rapper. I got locks. Like people always like was like, oh, you got a lighter? Oh, you got some papers? And like, and I was just like, no, dog. Like, you know, don't stereotype me. But then like there was a whole like reason for, I guess, doing it, because I had to make it good for me. Like I was like, you know, I got to get on it on my own terms. I can't be like, oh, I got dreads, so I'm gonna smoke weed. Like,
what inspired you to grow the dreads initially? Was it a style thing at first, or was it always kind of was it foresight, knowing that you would end up being into the spirituality of it?
It was like, let's see, I had braids, you know, I had long hair since before I was even allowed to have it. Like I went to a Christian school and there was strictly like 2 inches rule, like no, nothing over that. So I would like wash my hair in the morning and like let it dry and crunch up, and like, because I did not want to cut my hair. I was so pissed when they actually made me do it. But yeah, I would rock braids. I thought I had a funny shaped head, so I just wanted hair to like, you know, compliment it or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then probably like my prom, like around prom, I had a homegirl who went by Artist, and she had like these faux locks, you know, like little twisty joints. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yo, those look dope. And we kind of looked similar, like brother and sister. Mm-hmm. And I was like, those look dope. So I started like getting like individual little braids, and then I like, got twisties. And then I got my hair twisted for prom, and decided to leave them in pretty much. And
how long? So you've been growing them since you were, what, 16, 17?
Yeah, 16, 17.
How long are they now if you let them down?
Like to the middle of my back, but like they used to be like, oh, they're so long, but they look short to me. Like they look really, really short to me now. Mm-hmm. And I know that they're just going to keep growing. I probably won't cut them. I've thought about it, but I probably won't cut them for a while.
Yeah. I feel like people that I've talked to that have dreads is always kind of like there's a moment in their life when they just all of a sudden know that it's time to like change something. And, yeah. And that's what has to go then.
Yeah. It brought order to my whole shit. And like, I don't get them done by anybody. Like, I twist them myself. They look kind of raggy right now. But, you know, that's because my head is growing and like I don't want to like twist up my baby hairs and like get a receding hairline or something. Like, yeah, yeah, let it grow out.
What did you dress like in high school as you're skating? Was it like a skater kid type thing?
Nah.
Well, how was it?
Let's see. Okay. I was bordering skater kid probably like late high school, but I don't know. I was eccentric as like 11th grade, I had this whole turnaround. You can see it. I've seen like a Tumblr feed where like, you know, some kid like had his like 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade. It was pretty much the same thing. I got like more eccentric as high school went on. And like
eccentric how though? Like Andre 3000 eccentric?
Dude, he was like my biggest influence. Like, really? I think Andre made it okay for me to like, okay, I'm gonna get those bell bottom True Religion jeans. Like, they look dope. I'm not gonna lie, they look dope to me. And I was like, I'm gonna get them. And I would like get my hair braided up into like a mohawk like Coolio and like wear one contact or like half head braided, half not. Like, you know, I pretty much broke every uniform rule known to man and like just unforgivingly. I just,
you went to a school that was uniforms.
King Drew had uniforms.
Wow.
Dog.
You were like fresh princing it.
I was uniform from tyke up to high school.
Shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Straight up.
Yeah. I never had to go to uniform school. That's crazy.
Yeah, dog. It puts a strain on my parents' pockets and like I had to find my niche within it. I was like, okay, I like wearing black. I'm not going to wear your gold, but I'm going to wear black and I'm going to wear how I want to, you know, like people be like, yo, tuck your shirt in or some shit like that. I'd be like, man, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, you keep in contact with a lot of kids that you went to, you know, elementary or high school with?
You know what? Even within the bounds of school, I would jump from group to group.
Uh-huh.
Like, I never felt like, I won't say I never felt like I belonged. I felt like I belonged everywhere. So, like, you know, I just went through phases. When I was with my chick, I would hang out with her friends and some of the weird kids next to them and, like, you know, got to know them and stuff like that. But
I guess the reason that I ask is because now your aesthetic is, well, I would consider it eccentric now. I would personally.
Word.
Yeah, but it's a very, like, you could tell that you're a spiritual dude when I see you. You know what I mean? Like, it makes sense. The conversation that we're having all makes sense with your outward appearance. So it almost makes me wonder, like, the kids that also grew up in the uniform, like, I would say that you've rebelled against uniform at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for
and
the most part.
It makes me wonder if, like, other kids that grow up in a very uniform, you know, structured lifestyle growing up have also rebelled against it, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, like, a lot of the friends that I kept from, like, high school actually went to college with me. Like, they moved up with me. And the last group that I started kicking it with in high school were the eccentric kids in high school. And but they were more eccentric in terms of character. Like, they were just like very weird and like damn near what's the word, like Tourette's. They had Tourette's and like would just be like silly all the time.
No,
and like,
filters.
Yeah, just helped me, like, yeah, helped me get out of that rigid.
What was the racial makeup of your high school like?
Black and Mexican.
Oh, really?
And like sparingly whites that pretty much were black, you know,
yeah, yeah.
But like, yeah, it was right there on the corner of like 120th and Compton, dog. Like, yeah, it was.
What was it like busing it there?
It was cool. I lived in Gardena at the time. And my parents moved to Gardena right after I graduated 8th grade. There was a school bus that actually came since it was still considered LA County.
Oh,
and
cool.
Had to be out there like maybe 2 hours before school, rain or shine. And,
yeah.
Just park out there and wait for the bus to come. A lot of my growing experiences happened on the bus, dog.
Like, meaning?
Like, my first day, like, I sat in front of this dude named George, Big Jeezy, BGZ. He became my homie later, but he, like, set one of my braids on fire.
What?
Yeah, dog. He, like, had a lighter and, like, lit that shit. I was like, what the f-? You know? And he's a huge dude. And I wasn't going to say anything to him. But we would start off in my hood, which was pretty much G13, like Mexican territory. Like, you know, all the kids were pretty much good goody goodies. And then we would go to like 132nd and Van Ness, where it was like shotgun Crips and like kids that really were into that. And those were a lot my growing experiences. Like first day I sat next to this dude, Big Mike. Everybody was big, you know, but cuz he was just, you know, just a hood mentality.
Yeah.
And they toughened me up a lot because I, even though I like grew up in Long Beach, Compton, like I lived in Compton for 10 years, like during that whole time where I would, you know, go to church in Long Beach, I had never been exposed to those things. My mom wouldn't let me play outside and stuff like that. I was just very sheltered and just in my creative realm. I didn't want to go outside. I had a huge yard and stuff. But yeah, like just getting that experience on the bus, you know, having two of my closest, not only closest friends, but close friends of mine who were on my route pass in the same year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
From gun violence or what?
First one was from gun violence and the other one had a seizure. But I'm pretty sure it was
drug related.
Yeah,
something.
It was drug related, something to his, you know, his environment.
I feel you.
You know?
You know, you're in high school, you start toying with beats and stuff like that. You start rapping and recording, yeah?
Yeah.
When was the point where you met the current guys that you're running with now? Well, first off, name some of the people that you run with and tell me about, like, the collective that you're working with. And, yeah, kind of how you met those guys and how you guys started vibing.
Word. Early on, I started working at Vans, like, right after high school, the summer, transitioning to college. I started working at Vans. And
like Vans retail spot?
Yeah,
which
Vans,
one?
In Hermosa Beach.
Oh, okay.
They will try to apply to the one at South Bay Galleria near Gardena.
Yeah.
But they were building a new store, so they hired me to like help build this new store. And yeah, like Beach City stuff. It was cool. But my boss, her name was Jessica, really young chick, knew about everything that was LA and like was like, you know, knew that I made music. And around that time I had met John Wayne. And
how'd you guys meet?
At a poetry show at the Blue Cafe in Long Beach. He was just like beanie and sandals, like some frumpy dude. Like I was like, oh, who is this kid, you know? But he was holding it down. I was like, all right. He was like, you rap, because I did poetry and he rapped. And he was like, I think you rapped. I was like, yeah, I do. Like that's my forte, don't get it twisted. And we started vibing out. Then my boss was like, you should come with me to this club that I know is called the Airliner on Wednesday nights. It's super dope. And like I was like watching Adult Swim at that time, and I got this podcast that had like Flylo on it, and like got into Daedalus. And I go there that night, and it's Beat Invitationals,
Flylo,
and Daedalus. And I was just like, holy shit, like yeah, these guys are in my fucking iPod right now. Like I just found out about these guys, and it seemed very like destiny filled.
Synchronicity.
Yeah, I was just like, whoa, like, you know, this is around the time I'm like smoking weed and stuff too, like just really getting into it. And yeah, like I was like, oh, I gotta come here, like, you know, often as I can. And like didn't go for a long time, had to work, stack up, was in school and stuff. And then when I took a break from school, started kicking it with John Moore, and he was like, yo, we should hit up this spot that I know, like you would really like it. And I was like, okay, yeah. And then like happened to be a Wednesday, and it was the same place, and I was like, holy shit, like I'm back here again. And just went there religiously for like,
what year was that?
Maybe 2011, 2010.
Okay.
Oh, the first time I went was 2008, 2007, one of those. But yeah, so 2009, 2010, like religiously went there for like 2 years or so. Like it's a complete blur, like hella weeded out, you know, and stuff like that. Just trying to like see what was good and all of that. But yeah, that was like the bulk of my musical growth. And started like internet slanging, you know, internet hustling and shit, and like met Shlomo and like all of the We Did It cats. And you know, we vibed out for a cool couple years. And I mean, we recently had a little falling out because, you know, they're on different terms and stuff. I already knew that we were very much different people just by where we grew up, you know, but I'm not sore about it. Some people are.
It's like it was like a real falling out, not just a fading out, away.
Okay, it was more like a fading out for me.
Because I mean, I know like Shlomo and the We Did It dudes, they're like really on a fast track upwards right now. And so I could see, like, you know, sometimes when that happens, like, you know, people have to pull away a little bit. It is what it is.
Well, it was their entity before we even came into the picture. It was more like, dude, you're dope, we would like to have you on, but we still lived worlds apart and like, you know, just tried to keep up on the internet and stuff. But we're music heads. We'll like lose ourselves in our own respective spaces, and I respect the shit out of him and all the things that he does. He's always been cool with me, even up till recent, you know? I haven't really heard anything from him, but yo, like, much love and success to those cats.
Yeah,
and, like,
for sure.
Yo, like, you know, peace to them and their health and all of that. Like, that was the crew I was running with then. But, you know, since the falling out, it's just been pretty much me and John Wayne. We were like, you know, road dogs. And Jeremiah J, when he moved out here, like, he instantly became a quick brother. And I've been stewing with everybody in Highland Park, you know, Mind Design. That's like my brother. Like, you know, I'm a roommate of his now. Like, he stays at the house I stay at. And that's just the group I'm running with right now. Yeah. Just like, I won't even say that like they're misfits or anything. They're just like creative, but very like kind and open individuals. They got to be open if they listen to the shit that I do.
Right.
But yeah, that's my eyeball bunch right there.
I like what you said earlier about like when you're labbing, meaning when you're in the lab. And I like it because, have you ever heard the term shedding?
Nah.
So jazz musicians, when they call it shedding. Oh, it's like, dude, where have you been? I haven't seen you. I've been shedding. And it just means like lock yourself in a fucking shed and practice. And particularly like lock yourself in a shed with someone else that's good at their craft so you guys can get better together. You know what I mean? And so shedding. And so I feel like, do you and John do a lot of labbing together?
Yeah, probably not so much now. He's a busy, busy kid. Yeah, but like we used to like a great deal. And even so, like now, like I'll go to the studio and then like the whole day will go by and like, you know, we've just been in on this one thing. But he likes to play around too, so like we'll like fit in some video
games.
What's
a day of labbing like for you? Like, what will you start with? A beat or a writing or
I will mantra, you know, meditate, you know, try to like work on my posture and all of that stuff. And sit down, like just the other day, I had just got back into the rhythm of it. I just had a couple crates of records and like just went in and, you know, tracked it all out. And I like to do stuff in Ableton. So like I'll just like, you know, warp it, flip it, loop it, and like, you know, create a mass of sounds that I like, and then like do a little raw cut of like how I like loops to be, you know, bounce them out, throw them on my iPod, go to the skate park, you know, like hear it in my headphones while I'm skating, like how would I like this to be, and then come back, you know, mix it a little bit, sit back, write a little bit, and like, you know, I just bounce around. I like to keep a lot of like sessions and things open so that I work, you know, kind of laterally, and then at one point it's just like, you know, boom. And like all of a sudden I got like, you know, 30 tracks at the ready, you know, this is like a lot of cultivation.
Yeah.
And then sometimes there are those like, oh, I got to lace this right now. And it's just like, I'll just work on it until it's done. But, you know, those are like, you know, little things.
What projects have you put out so far that are like available to the public?
Ooh, I don't know how available to the public they are just because of how much I've like disappeared in terms of internet presence. But they're all mixtapes, you know. I didn't know how serious to take it. I just like, I would get music, buy music and like, you know, like it. John would send me stuff and I'd be like, oh, this is dope. And I would just lace it, you know, and put out these mixtapes on some like, oh, yeah, yeah, whatever.
What were they called?
Okay, the first one I did was Sound Zero, but that was mostly like my production and a couple beats that people sent to me. And then after that was G7 and I beat Jack Teller for that. And then see, G7, Elliot Blackbird, More Throwaways, then Awful Alterations, then this thing called Four Pluses, which is just like, you know, positivity to the fourth degree. Four for me is a number of balance. So I like, at that time, I really needed that. And then I did because I was like getting like feedback from people, hell of like, they were like, oh, like, we really love this. I love the production on it. I'm like, oh, I just stole that beat. Please don't like think too greatly of me. It was just like some fun shit. You know, I didn't think it would like spread that far. But I went ahead and just like produced my own shit. I was like, I make beats. I'm just going to make some beats and rap on them, you know, and put out tape. And that's the only thing I have sitting on Bandcamp right now.
Is it tape?
Yeah.
What's the Bandcamp?
The Bandcamp is zero backwards. I have an H at the end, so it's Horez, H-O-R-E-Z.
.bandcamp.com.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one that I listened to. I liked it a lot.
Like, yeah?
Yeah. That's the thing. I don't really... oftentimes with the podcast, I don't have people in that I'm not that familiar with. You know what I mean? Meaning like, you know, I've never had a conversation with you before. You know what I mean? Like, I've just heard your music and it was enough for me to be like, wow. You know, like it's really good,
oh,
man. You're very talented.
Man, thank you very
much.
Yeah,
absolutely, man. I found out about you because of Low Leaf.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, dude, check him out. And I fucking text her. I'm like, dude, this I had no idea that this fool raps so good, like super tight.
Yeah, Queen Thing. She believes in me, and I believe in her. Who doesn't believe
in
her?
She's great.
Yeah, super tight.
Very like positive energy to be around and very talented. Hopefully I'll have her on here one day,
too. Oh, yeah, she's down. I know even if she's not down, you're down.
So, anyways, so tell the people like where they can find you online at this point.
Probably Twitter. This is probably like my
what is the Twitter?
_0 zeroh. So okay. Yeah, if you want to holler at me, it's there, or like my email is up on there.
You have some stuff on SoundCloud, no?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I do have SoundCloud as well.
Yeah.
And that's a little harder to remember what it is. It's like SoundCloud/ I just want. Like, or something like that. EYE just want.
I was lurking on John's SoundCloud the other day listening to stuff, and you have some tracks on there with him too.
Yeah.
What's the one that I was talking to you about in the car?
Cool Runnings.
Yeah, Cool Runnings. If you guys haven't heard this track, Cool Runnings with John Wayne and Zero, like, go listen to that. Just Google search John Wayne Cool Runnings. It both of you guys murder that.
Yeah.
Really great track.
Beastly, man.
Yeah.
Love that
yeah.
shit. Love that shit.
So yeah, man. Thank you for coming in. I appreciate it. It was a really interesting conversation, and I wish you the best, and I look forward to, like, you know, the first official debut release.
Man, me too, man. Me too.
Do you want to do any like shout outs before we end?
Yeah, shout outs to John Wayne, shout outs to my roommates, Chad, Alima, Ringo. I love y'all. We miss Milo. He passed this morning, got hit by a car.
Yeah, some horrible shit happened on the way to pick him up. As soon as I picked him up, he told me that his cat had gotten hit this morning.
Yeah.
So rest in peace to Milo.
Yeah, Milo, he's a good man. Not Milo the rapper. Milo is alive and kicking.
Very sad to hear about your cat. Because I told him that, you know, on a previous podcast, I had told the story of how I ran over a cat, and it was a very depressing thing. So I'm sure that the guy or gal who hit them also feels miserable as well. So, nothing but sad thoughts about that.
Yeah, but much love to all the people out there. You know, life continues on even after.
What was the kind of platform, label, crew thing that you guys are starting? What was that real quick?
John Wayne is in the process of building the aesthetic and the premise for Black Russian, and it's a really, really cool platform for all the homies that we've been recently doing music with. If you've caught the Boiler Room, like a lot of the people that were in that room bubbling with us, pretty much that's who's involved.
That's like you, John, Azizi,
Jeremiah, possibly Quayle. I mean, everybody is on some like possible stuff, but
yeah.
Mind Design, like, it's, you know, it just depends upon.
It's a core group of friends, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. Oliver the Second, you know, he just got put on that night, you know, because he was hungry as hell at that Boiler Room, dog. Like, you killed the kid.
Nice.
But it was this idea that we conceived a long time ago. It was actually going to be a duo between me and John, Black Russian, you know, me being a black bird and him being a Russian. but he turned it into a label idea. And like, I was like, that's perfect. Like, we'll have a home to do our weird shit. And like, you know, I think we got enough clout to like really push that. And all the talent that we want to push out has like amazing abilities, and we'll make a very odd and prolific conglomerate.
For
I
sure.
believe. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Bright future ahead of you. I have a feeling. Yeah.
Thank you. Much love.
Very talented rapper. So anyhow, my name is Intuition. This was Zero. Thank you for coming in. You can follow us on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat. Follow my man behind the boards, Database, at I Am Database,
what
base
up,
with two S's. We're coming live from the Cosmic Zoo studio. Check out cosmiczoo.org, the vibey spot run by the magnanimous Daddy Kev and James No Can Do McCall. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition, and check out the YouTube video that we're going to have up with Zero at youtube.com/thatskindaneat. And you can find everything on kindaneat.net. Again, thank you guys for tuning in. We love you. And this was Kinda Neat.
Yeah, peace.
That was dope.
Oh, man, that's dope. Yeah.